Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I know how important it is to do what you really have a passion for. I also know that life sometimes puts us in situations where we're maybe doing what we don't really want to do. But we go, what is it? What is it that is so significant to me that I would get up every day just excited about doing what I love to do? Well, I know one of my passions is doing my show, obviously. I've been doing it for so many years, and I really, really do enjoy it. Why? Because it makes my world very interesting, and there's a numerous amount of reasons that I could possibly expound upon. My guest today, Steve Olscher, is a man who likes to classify himself as a reinvention expert. Now, what is that? Well, we're going to talk to Steve and find out, because this is a man who has had to reinvent himself more than once. And the result has been that now he's sharing his secrets through his book, What is Your What? What is one amazing skill, talent, gift that you have that could totally transform your life into what you really want? Welcome to the show, Steve. It's nice to have you with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Steve, you're a guy that has, well, the entrepreneur's soul. I will put it that simply. When I heard about your book, What is Your What?, I thought, I really would like to know more about this man's story. But I also wanted to know why you had developed the word niche-atize. And how you managed to get the title of the reinvention expert. Why don't you share with my listeners about your first entrepreneurial experiment called the Funky Pickle?
You know, I've been an entrepreneur literally since my late teens, from the time I could pretty much pick up a rake and try to move some leaves around to the point of actually opening up my own nightclub when I was 20 years of age, which was called the Funky Pickle. Literally from a very, very young point in time, I just always have had that entrepreneurial bug. And, you know, they talk about in the book, What is Your What? Reality is that, you know, your what chooses you. It's not that which you have chosen. And so that entrepreneurial spirit, it was just something that chose me. I mean, really nothing that I could do about it. And it's just been a really interesting trek ever since some of those initial endeavors. But the Pickle was a really interesting non-alcoholic nightclub smack dab in the middle of an alcohol-diffused environment. So that was an interesting go.
Steve, one of the biggest skills that anyone can ever develop, in my estimation, is the capacity of communicating effectively and well. Your book, What is Your What?, is a workbook. It also is an informational resource utilizing the experiences of a number of different people that have crossed your path. And because of your financial positioning and your success as an entrepreneur, you've moved within a circle of individuals that are recognizable, some very, very big name people. However, the one theme that goes through the book, which I think is a significant one, is that becoming world famous may be some people's objective, but the real key in life is to resonating with what you really are. And this is not an easy thing for people usually to do, because we're always getting filtered thinking on the part of many people. Lots of it is given from the heart, sincerely, from whatever positioning that individual who's giving you the wisdom is coming from. But it takes guts, as far as I'm concerned, Steve, to really be able to step into your own identity, because you may end up not being a black sheep. You may end up a puce green or a chartreuse with yellow polka dots and purple fringe. I mean, this is just the way life is. How is it that you were able to be comfortable with going in your own direction, with going into your own uniqueness?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? So a few different ways to answer what you've addressed there. And first and foremost, what I really love about what you said is that, you know, you're right. Your what isn't something that you do. Your what is who you are. And so it's so important to understand the distinction between those two frames of mind. And for me, you know, the truth of the matter is that it took me a long time to finally get to the point where you become comfortable with being the black sheep or whatever you want to call it, because reality is you only have two choices. I mean, you can live your life based on who you inherently are and follow the path that you set for, or you can consistently live your life based on the agendas and ostensibly the whims of other people. And it takes a very strong person to not operate like a windsock, as I call it, where, you know, something happens and you kind of blow that way, and then something else happens and you kind of blow this way. And, you know, I mean, that takes serious strength. It takes serious anchors that are set deep into your soul to be able to forge your own path and to be okay with knowing that you're going to alienate some people along the way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very, very true. I don't know of any shortcuts. I have yet in my life experience, because believe me, I've tried to explore a few, and I find I end up going through so many different twists and turns, and I go, why in the world didn't I stay true to what I know is me? But I think that's part of life. I think people need to stop beating themselves up over this and just say, okay, I mucked it up. What do I need to do? Ask for some direction, and then get yourself back on track with who you are. But as you mentioned, it has to come from deep within yourself. That one of the situations that affected you quite deeply was in 2009. Your stepfather, who you were very close to, was passing away. You were with him. And you had this experience. You use the term vision in your book about your life. Tell us what that was and how that affected you.
Yeah, that was definitely a turning point in my life. I now call that type of moment a yay-no moment, a yes-no moment, where you're faced with that fork in the road, that moment of truth, where you can really go down two very different paths after that happens. Now, what happened for me was, as you said, I was with my stepfather, who was literally in his final days, very much a father to me, raised me since I was 10. And he could no longer communicate verbally because he was so sick at this point. But I was holding his hand, and I had a vision of my funeral, not of his funeral, but actually of mine. And I could hear the words being spoken graveside, which basically were, here lies Steve Olscher. He dedicated his life to chasing the almighty dollar. And that's all that was said. And it really did hit me hard, because it was pretty clear to him that my life to that point was of meaning to me and those closest to me, but really no one else. And he knew that I've always wanted to have a greater impact on the world, but clearly the path that I had forged wasn't empowering me to really be able to reach people in a meaningful way. And so that's when everything really began to shift for me, where I said, you know, look, I can continue down this entrepreneurial path of creating things that are commodity-driven, if you will, and I'll be remembered as someone who was able to make money, or I could try to do more. What that meant at the moment, I didn't know, but I knew that I had to do something different. I knew that I had to get out of these commodity-driven circles and really start becoming clear on how I could contribute to my community, to my environment, and to our world, right? I mean, that's ultimately why I think we're all here, is to add value for others. As Andrea Robinson, who's one of my coaching clients, once said, you know, it took her almost 60 years to realize that she is the solution to someone else's problem. And I think that's so true. I strongly believe that we, in fact, are all, in our own way, the solution to someone else's problem. And it really required me to examine where I was and figure out how to get to that next level.
In your book, What Is Your What?, there's a lot of wisdom. There are what would be defined as exercises that you recommend that people do. And, of course, they're able to do this in the privacy of their own environment. And there's a quote by Machiavelli that I really liked. A prudent man, and I'll add woman, should always follow in the footsteps of great men and women and imitate those who have been outstanding. And I'm always reflective of that because of being a fan of history, I found that history often is presented by the demeanor of the person that is writing it, and it may or may not be the truth. But when it comes to greatness, greatness is a definition that is not encompassing the almighty dollar. It is encompassing courage. It is encompassing values. It is encompassing so many aspects of the potentiality of the human spirit. And greatness is something that each of us will define in our own way. I think looking and being able to even recognize what really is greatness is a tremendous accomplishment, because in our world today, and I don't know that it's ever been any different, but in our world today especially, it's magnified. We have many people that are called leaders that couldn't find their way out of a paper bag, and they're extolled for very superficial components, and then all of a sudden there's a blast that comes out and they're stripped of everything that was the false front, which is the way it really should be, so that you can see things clearly. That is also not something that's easy to do. Many times, we don't know what greatness is. What would you define as greatness?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? And reality is that that is going to be different for everyone that you ask. I will not define greatness in any meaningful way at this moment, but I will define success. And I strongly believe that our best leaders and those who are the most successful are those that adhere to what William Sheehan defines success to be, which is that success is having the courage, the determination, and the will to become the person you were meant to be. And I will say that that's a leader that I'll follow down the rabbit hole any day of the week, is someone who has the courage, the determination, and the will to become the person they were meant to be. And, you know, whether that, in fact, then reflects greatness, perhaps. But I do know that far too often we live our lives based on the definitions of what others believe we should be doing and how we should be doing it. And if you then have the courage, the determination, and the will to become the person you were meant to be, you're not living by anyone else's definition. You're not living by anyone else's agenda. You're not living by anyone else's direction, if you will. And so that to me is a true leader. That to me is the true definition of greatness, someone that I would absolutely follow, listen to, and just be humbled to be in their presence.
Maslow is a person that you have a great deal of respect for. He defined self-actualization in this way, and I'm quoting from your book, "The full realization of one's potential, the desire for self-fulfillment, namely the tendency for the individual to become actualized in what he or she is potentially, it's at this level where you have complete freedom to soar." I think in I look at the people that I've known through my life that for me have represented the qualities of what I consider an outstanding human being is, and as you mentioned in your book, you say your word is your bond. They're trustworthy. And also, they don't ask other people to follow what they do. They say, become who you are. If you can use me as something as an inspiration for you to go beyond what I've done, that's what any good teacher does, in fact. That's what you encourage, because you want that individual and or individuals to actually outdo you in many ways. You want them to be just absolutely exemplary in their conduct, in their ethics, and you also want them to be able to polish and shine those wonderful gifts that they have been given, whatever they may be, so that they just are beacons. We are in a time we need real beacons. We need to have that is so significant in human experience to shine so that it can be an example for others. And you say one of the keys to regaining control of our life, and there's a lot of people today that are just so discouraged. They look at the media, they hear the stories, and they go, oh, well, why should I even bother? Why should I even bother to improve myself? Life sucks. That's a popular term anyway. But you say to regain control of your life, not trying to change the world, but of your own life and your own space, you must make deliberate choices with an understanding of the consequences. How many times do we hear stories in the media of people that do things that are absolutely stupid, horrific, and everything in between? And they say, I'm sorry. And they basically didn't think. So learning to think is something that has to be acquired, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it's amazing how our education system is structured right now, where we teach people how to read and write and do some math, but we don't really teach people how to live and to make smart choices and to take responsibility for who they are, what they do, and ultimately what they have and how they contribute to others in this lifetime. And so as I look at where we stand right now, I mean, we are in such a, I don't want to say a dire situation, but yeah, I mean, reality is that as, and I'm not the first one to say this, but, you know, the if you will, the gap between the haves and the have-nots, I mean, is reaching really an epidemic state. And so the question is, why? What do the haves know that the have-nots don't? And why is there such a discrepancy between the two groups? And I do think that personal responsibility and taking action and being proactive as opposed to being reactive is one of the first places that we need to start, one of the first places that we really need to examine and teach people how to be proactive in their lives as opposed to reactive to the cards that they're dealt. And it's scary at this point because, you know, it's just, as I say, often in the book, it's just, it's so easy to be a critic, and it's so hard to be a creator. I mean, people have been critics since you and I have gotten on this call, Donna. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know why she said that, or why did he say this, or, you know, why this, or it's just, it's so easy to sit back and be critical, and it's so hard to actually create. And I think between the idea of becoming a creator and the idea of being proactive, we could really help bridge some of that gap.
I think that's what makes life exciting. It makes life interesting. And I think that when we can share that with others and get them enthusiastic and help them realize they can do it for themselves, then it's really terrific. Now, you have in your book, What Is Your What?, something you titled the sufficiency theory. What is it?
So the sufficiency theory is one of the seven life-altering principles. And the seven life-altering principles, which the acronym for that is the SLAP, which I didn't know actually until after I wrote it, which is funny in itself, but they're really all designed to help people understand that, you know, wherever you go, there you are, right? As Thomas A. Kempis once wrote way back in the 1400s. And so the reality is that the seven life-altering principles are designed to really help you live with conviction and purpose and deal with life as it happens. Now, the sufficiency theory is really all about living your life as though you've achieved the goals and objectives that you set forth for yourself, and using that feeling really as fuel to propel you towards those goals and objectives. And I know it seems a little counterintuitive, but for most people, we live our lives on pause, and we draw these arbitrary lines in the sand where we say, once I get to this point, whatever that point might be, then I will grant myself permission to feel and do and act in a certain way. But what really ends up happening is we continually move that line in the sand farther down. So if we say we want $25,000 in the bank, and once we have $25,000 in the bank, then and only then will we be able to really enjoy life and breathe easy and walk with confidence and get the girl of our dreams or whatever it might be. You know, what happens until that point? Well, nothing. I mean, really, it then becomes a self-destructing, you know, type of pattern where our actions and feelings and emotions reflect that state of wanting as opposed to reflecting that state of having. And ultimately, when you get 25 grand in the bank, Donna, I mean, what happens? What do you do after you get your 25 grand?
You can sit there and pretend you're counting it, or you can say, all right, now what's my next objective?
Exactly. And then you just put the line in the sand farther down. You say, well, okay, well, now I need 50 grand in the bank. And so we just continually move this line. And I use this exercise with those who are unemployed because I know what it's like to really struggle. And I do know what it's like to feel as though there's just no light at the end of the tunnel. And the emotions that go hand in hand with being unemployed are very real. And there's a sense of hopelessness. There's a sense of just unworthiness. There's probably anger and, disappointment and all of these emotions that go hand in hand with just feeling as though you're not able to contribute to the world in a meaningful way and, frankly, having a tough time making ends meet. And so what I do is I have the people that I'm teaching put all of those emotions on a piece of paper on the left side. On a piece of paper, you would draw a line in the middle. And on the left side of that line, you would put the emotions that you're feeling now, the disappointment, the unhappiness, the anger, et cetera. And then on the right side, I have them write down what those emotions turn into after they land a job, after they have money in the bank, et cetera. And so, you know, anger turns into happiness, disappointment turns into relief, lack of confidence turns into confidence, et cetera, right? So now you've got two columns of adjectives that are describing how you're feeling, once before you have the job and the other after. And then I ask them, you know, what does it cause? And, you know, realistically, and I'll run this by you here, Donna. So, I mean, what do you think happens if someone goes into a job interview with those negative adjectives kind of carrying with them on their shoulders. I mean, how do you think that job interview goes? Obviously, the answer is not very well. I mean, if you're carrying the emotions of anger and frustration and disappointment, et cetera, you know, people pick up on that, right? And so the odds are pretty good that interview is not going to go very well. But if you go into the interview with the feelings of confidence and happiness and joy and whatever else you define, you know, these adjectives as in terms of what you would feel after you land the job, then needless to say, the interview would go much better. But reality is, and I asked them, and I'll ask you the same thing, you know, what does it cost you? I mean, literally, what does it cost you to walk around with that right side of the column as your way of being, to have that sense of happiness and fulfillment and contentment? What does that cost you to act and be and do things in that manner?
Doesn't cost a penny. What it costs is attention.
Yeah.
That's the cost,
yeah.
Is paying attention.
Yeah. So it doesn't cost you anything at all to make that shift. And yet, if you carry around the left side of the column, it literally costs you everything. And so that's what I encourage people to think about insofar as the efficiency theory, is what is it costing you to carry that left side of the column around on a consistent basis, and the answer is that it costs you everything.
Well, I know, Steve, our time is just about over, and I wanted my listeners to know about your website, which is SteveOlsher, OLSHER.com. What is your what? If you are ready, and when I say this, I mean it by being open, to exploring yourself, and having a sense of curiosity, maybe about who you really can expand yourself into being because you've already got what you've got. Nobody needs to hand it to you on a platter. You're not going to find it in a Fortune 500 listing. You're going to find it because you've already got it within yourself. And there's not a person on this planet that has not been endowed with gifts and talent. It's a fact. So if you're interested in exploring yourself, if you're interested in you, this isn't being narcissistic. It means that you want to take a positioning within the greatness that lies within you. What is Your What is a wonderful workbook. It is loaded with all kinds of information. It will empower you as a person. You will need to take time for it, of course. So why not check it out? Why not discover the one, well, maybe a talent that you're meant to utilize in a very special way? Check out his website, SteveOlsher.com. What is Your What? Steve, thanks for being my guest today. It's been a delight.
Absolutely, Donna. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break, and when we come back, well, we've got a lot more things to share with you. Lots of goodies. So don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime, or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, Trim up and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in to if you'd like to chat with me is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, welcome to the show. All you need to do is call in and give me your first name or initial. And, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then after that, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that is of significance to you. So, again, the telephone number is 888-627-6008. Quickly, I want to let you know that I am going to be going up to the far north. Yes, Fairbanks and Anchorage, Alaska. I'm going to be broadcasting from up there. And we'll be having the best of Donna on for the next 2 days. And all of that information is on BBS. You'll have all of the details that you need regarding not only my guests, but also how, if you wanted to check out their websites, you're going to be able to do that. There's just all kinds of information there. So I hope if you have missed the other broadcasts, you will be able to tune in and listen. And then I wanted to let you know that we are going to have as guests this week Linda Wojcik, who is going to be sharing information about her son Joshua. Now, Linda's story is quite a powerful one, and it's a very meaningful one when I read it because I know of a family. In fact, it's a relative of my husband who went through a similar scenario, and the pain and suffering that they experienced, Linda tells how she has been able to take that and make it something that has empowered her life. Kick in the Wall, Barbara Abercrombie is going to be with us also this week. You want to be a writer, you've had a passion for being able to do what you want to do in that arena. Well, Barbara, if you feel like you're stuck, she has some wonderful suggestions to get you unstuck. That's right. And then we're going to be talking with Donna Stone, and we're going to be talking about healthy you. This is a woman that decided she was going to look at herself and see what she could do to make her own life healthier, and it's made a difference, and so she's passing along her suggestions to those that are interested in listening. Rewrite Your Life, A Journey to Oneness, Soldier of Finance, Complete Guide to How to Negotiate, The Condor Song. All of this and more is going to be coming up on the Donna Sebo Show, so be sure you check the listings so that you know what's evolving. Tell your friends so that they can listen too and enjoy the knowledge that is shared by those who are doing their own special something. I wanted to share a recipe with you before I do that. Now, this is something, I don't know, I just get into the baking mode. What about you? Do you love to cook? I really enjoy cooking. And my schedule is sometimes so wacky and busy. I'm using the crock pot quite a bit. So I'll be sharing some of those recipes as I go along. But I sort of improvise. I throw in some broth, vegetables. It's like sort of like your stone soup. Anything and everything that might be available in the refrigerator, I pop in, and somehow or another just turns out wonderfully. So that's great. But one of the things, especially when the weather starts getting colder, is bread. I absolutely love making bread. Well, I came across this recipe. Actually, Laura Starr shared it. It is a dough that you don't have to knead. And so I thought I would share that with you today because, heck, we all are busy, right? And we are sometimes always looking for shortcuts. This, I don't know necessarily is a shortcut, but it sure is a surprising thing. And, oh, the smell of bread when it's baking in a home, unbelievably yummy. And, of course, I always like to get out my homemade preserves, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It is a soul food as far as I'm concerned, so I'll be sharing that with you. I wanted to share a little bit of trivia regarding a house in Ashland, Massachusetts. Yes, ghostly encounters. This has to do with a place that's called the Stones Public House. And, of course, here we are in the time frame of fall where spooky stories, well, it's getting time tell some of those spooky stories. And this is Stone's Public House. Is an inn and a pub. It was built in 1834 by John Stone, and it still is alive and well as a restaurant and pub today. Now, there was a manager of Stone's that said that one night when he was in the pub alone, he was cleaning up. That's what you do on a daily basis when you have a pub. And all of a sudden, he was scared to death. He couldn't explain it. He just knew that he was in a bad place, in a bad space. This is what happened. Nobody was around him. A handful of birdseed fell through holes that were in the ceiling. He had just finished mopping the floor. So you can hear that birdseed going as it fell on the floor. There were some other people that worked in the Stone House, and they said water faucets turn on by themselves. Patrons, place is busy with people. They say they could feel someone tapping on their shoulder, only to find nobody behind them when they turn around. Spooky. Well, there was a hypnotist and parapsychologist. His name is Ralph Bibbo. He loved these stories, and he decided he was going to visit the inn to see if anything would happen to him. And he visited there more than once, and he said there's at least 6, possibly 7 different ghosts that dwell there. He said Stone himself, the original owner, accidentally killed a boarder in 1845 and tried to cover up the murder. And the other spirits were the accomplices or witnesses to Stone's crime. That's what Ralph Bibbo feels happened. And having sworn to keep Stone's crime a secret while they were alive, they are still bound to the pub in death. Don't you just love ghost stories? Yeah. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay. Now, these are the ingredients for this no-knead dough. Now, this recipe was published in 2006 in the New York Times. The gentleman that put out the original recipe, his name is Mark Bittman, and people just loved it. And so there's all kinds of adaptations. So you can do whatever adaptations you want or variations. This is a quicker process, and you may not think it's such a quick process, but it's the type of thing that when you're working with it, you just know you're going to leave it alone for a bit of time. Now, these are the ingredients. 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 3/4 of a teaspoon of active dry yeast, 3/4 of a teaspoon of active dry yeast, 1/2 teaspoon of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of sugar, 1.5 teaspoons of salt, 1.5 cups of warm water, and 1/2 teaspoon of vinegar, any kind of vinegar. Whatever you like. Doesn't make any difference. Balsamic, wine, cider vinegar, doesn't make any difference. Now, this is what you do. This is how simple it is. You mix all of the ingredients in a real large dough. Now, it's going to be thick. It's going to be gooey. You want to cover the bowl with a plastic wrap and then drape it with a towel. Myself, I prefer just using the towel. I don't know. The plastic wrap always ends up sticking to the dough as it rises. So I prefer not going through that and just use a little towel to cover the big bowl and take a little bit of oil and put it over the top of the dough when it's there. Now, you want to leave it in a warm spot. And if you're like me, here in the Pacific Northwest, especially with the damper, cooler weather we've got, rising bread, it's the pit. It'll take 40 years for it to rise sometimes. So what you want to do, you want to put it in the oven. Turn on your oven light. Just put it in your oven. You don't turn the heat on, and the warmth generated by the light contributes to a perfectly balanced environment, and your dough will rise. Now, when you leave it in there for about 6 hours, that's right, just leave it alone, more or less. You can check it. You'll know because it will double in size, obviously. And then you want to take a cutting board when it's risen. You want to take a cutting board, and you want to spray it with some oil or rub coconut oil over your cutting board. and turn your dough onto the board, and you want to shape the dough into a round loaf, and you again want to cover it. Now, again, I suggest, because this is what I do in my kitchen, I take a little bit of olive oil and just rub it over the top of the dough before I put my towel over, and then I just let it rest. You also, if you have a cutting board of the right size, after you've shaved the loaf, you can put it back in the oven. Just leave the oven light on. Just put it right back in there. Now, what you want it to do is rest for about an hour. Now, halfway, 30 minutes after it's rested, you want to preheat your oven to 450 degrees. So if you've had it in the oven, obviously you're going to take it out and just let it do its own thing. But or if you have a double oven like I do, then you'll heat the one that you know you're going to be doing your baking in to 450 degrees. Now, you want a Dutch oven, a lidded casserole, ceramic, not glass, or other heavy lidded pan or pot. You want to put it in the oven to preheat it. There's a trick to this. And then, once it's preheated, it'll take about maybe 10 minutes to really get the pot heated. You want to scrape or pour the dough into the heated pot, and your dough is going to be very gooey and wet. But don't worry about that. What's going to happen is that you'll bake it at 450 for 30 to 35 minutes. You remove the lid, and you're going to bake it for 15 to 20 minutes more until the top is nice and brown and crusty. It is going to be very, very good. And you can use whole wheat flour, whatever you like. But it is an easy recipe, but remember, the key is being sure to heat that Dutch oven or casserole, you know, the ceramic that you have, whatever it is, so that it is going to do what it should do. And you know that cast iron pots, they are the greatest thing to work with, especially if they're well seasoned. They will just really do the job. This is Donna Seaborn. I want to encourage you, if you'd like to do so, to call me at 888-627-6008. And again, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just relax, let me tell you what it is that I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me about anything that is important to you. There are some new applications that enable you to keep track of things, because as we all know, we have gazillions of passwords. Are you like me? Do you have a list somewhere, and you go, yeah, this has got to be changed, this has to be done, and you go through that, drives you nuts. And they tell you, don't put your passwords on the computer. Well, there is a firm that you can utilize, or actually an application you can utilize. It's called Data Vault. Data Vault. It securely stores and keeps track of all of your codes, and you can use a separate password for each account and website login. There is a fee. It's about $10 for this application. And also, you all know that if you have Outlook or a system equivalent, you can log in people's birthdays and be notified. However, there is a new application, Cleverbug, that will send you not only an alert and a prompt, they'll help you create a custom card using Facebook photos if you so desire. The app then prints and mails the card in 2 to 5 business days, so it arrives in time for your big occasion. And it's free. Yep, that's right, Cleverbug. And then, all of us with vehicles, we need to have car maintenance reminders. Well, there is tune-up time that you can have on your machine. It'll track your fuel usage, your efficiency, and cost. The charge for this is $2.99, and it is easily available. Same thing with medications. RxPal delivers multiple reminders to take medications or vitamins for an individual or for several family members. It'll let you know when your prescription is running low and links to your pharmacy for easier refills. And it's free on an Android. Donna Seaborn here. We're taking a break. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. I was sent some information that I thought I would share with you. One, housing is really going up quite nicely. There is a general attitude on the part of many people that they really don't want to give up the dream of having their own home. But I had the chuckle on some details that sometimes when realtors are dealing with people who are selling their homes, when they actually find themselves having to go into the homes of the individuals, because if you're a realtor, you want to know how to present your house that you've got on the market the best way possible. And this commentary came forth that said you never know what people have behind closed doors in their houses. And these are some of the things that have been found. One realtor went into a person's home and found a bedroom full of birds, completely full of birds. No furniture, just birds. Another house they walked into was full of dog poop. That's right. The elderly owner of the house never let the animals outside. Another home, and I've had this experience, thousands of magazines stacked to the ceiling with only pathways between to even get to different rooms. And another person, they walked into someone's home and they said, here are naked pictures of the owner, and she was very elderly, like in her 90s, in her heyday, all over the place. And then another person went into a trailer house and found genuine Van Gogh paintings on the inside of this nondescript trailer. You never know what you're going to find when you go into homes. I have a friend who was asked by an associate if she, because she had retired from her position, if she would help this person clean their house. Well, when she walked into the house, it hadn't been cleaned in so many years that when she went into the person's bedroom and she touched the drapes literally disintegrated in her hands as she was taking them off because she was going to send them to the dry cleaners. They literally just fell apart in her hands, and she found behind the drapes there was an inch or more of dirt and dust, spider's web, that had accumulated. And in this person's bedroom, there was just enough of a path to walk through the bedroom door and around to the side of the bed so the person could get into it. They had so much stuff in this room. It was just amazing. She said, I can't imagine someone living in this kind of an environment for over 30, 40 years. Stories that realtors can share, I think, are really hair-raising. It's just an amazing experience. And I wanted to share a cute story that I also got. It says a class of high school students was on its way from a field trip, on the way back from a field trip, and the bus driver pulled over at a rest stop. One of the students had stomach trouble, so as soon as the bus stopped, he got off and headed for the restroom stall. As soon as he closed the door, the man in the next stall said, "Hi there, how's it going?" The student thought it was odd that the man in the next stall wanted to start a conversation, but he thought, maybe this is one of the teachers from the other buses. He felt silly talking through the wall, but he answered, "Not bad." The man in the next stall said, "What are you doing?" The embarrassed student answered, "Well, we're all headed back to school from the field trip, right?" To which the man in the next stall said, "Look, I'll have to call you back. Every time I say something, some genius in the next stall keeps answering me." Oh, I'll tell you, having cell phones and having conversations in certain places, you need to think about that very carefully. I have seen people do this, and you're responding to them, you're talking to them, and they're not talking to you at all. I've seen this in malls, I've seen it in restaurants, and you really go, whoops, don't these people realize that when they're talking on the cell phones like that, everybody in God's green acre is going to be able to hear them? Remember, when you're talking on that cell phone, people hear every word you are saying. Think. And I really have watched people just totally zone out when they're on cell phones. They are surprised if someone says, "Excuse me, would you please turn off your cell phone?" I know of a postal clerk who will not deal with anyone that's talking on their cell phone. She said, "If you're here, you want me to take care of your business, I need your attention." And she's had people get angry with her, but she said, "I don't care. I'm going to have your attention." So remember, as a factor of courtesy, be aware that when you are using a cell phone, be courteous regarding the people that are around you. They really are not interested in your personal life. They could care less. Think before you put yourself in a positioning like that. Jackie Robinson is an American hero. Jackie Robinson is a man that broke the color barrier when it came to baseball. His story is just so absolutely inspiring, and I'm honored to share it with you. I'll share it with you this week. But I found that when you look at history, when you look at recent history regarding racial situations that have gone on, they exist in all parts of the world, all parts of the world. So many different situations. And I think of how individuals working together with a common cause were able to make such profound effects on the world that they lived in such interesting ways. And Jackie Robinson is one of those people, and I will be sharing his story, like I said, in this week's programming. So be aware. He is a very special guy, and of course there is a movie that has just come out about him, and just a very, very special person. Donna Siebel here. I know that we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You're the captain of your soul. It is so important for you to realize that who you are does make a difference. Don't rely on other people's opinions to determine who you are. You may want to use their comments as a barometer to a degree. But more than anything else, you're the one living in your own skin. Don't ever forget, you have the right of choice. And if you want to do something that really is in your heart and soul, and you know it's the right thing for you to do, go for it. But be flexible enough to realize that what is your what may come about in an entirely different way than maybe you originally planned. Donna Siebel here. Have a magnificent day, a magnificent life. And I'm on my way to Alaska, and we'll be back with you live in a couple of days. Meanwhile, don't miss the shows, because you're going to find the show on Area 51 and also Collaboration Economy. Both shows, outstanding. You'll enjoy them. This is Donna Siebel. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.